Way down in Missouri, when I heard this lullaby, while the stars were blinking and the moon was shining high.
Welcome to Showing Missouri, the history of Missouri, one county at a time. We are down at the very corner of Pemiscot County. You could almost be in Dunklin or New Madrid, but if you threw a, if you had a good arm and threw a rock. We are at Bean and Bean Cotton with the new senator from Southeast Missouri, Senator, I guess we can call him Senator-elect, right, Jason Bean?
Yes, sir.
And we were here with his brother, Barry Bean. Barry, thank you for making the time to visit with us.
Happy to do it.
So we're doing a series now, kind of intermingle with the history of the state. We're talking about the history of some of the senators, history of some of the folks that are coming into office. We'll be talking to his, predecessor before long, Doug Leibler, coming up. But I thought we'd start right down here. I call it the first district, probably the most important, right? The most important to me anyway, here in Boot Hill. Goes down from, Senator, won't you tell us about the district, where it stretches? You've walked it sooner than I have.
Yeah, I've walked it a few times. So it starts over in Shannon County in the west, comes through Carter County, Butler County, keeps on coming to Stoddard County, Mississippi County, New Madrid County, Pemiscot, Dunklin, makes a circle there.
So you hit Shannon by Summersville, Danny Stables' old territory, yes, all the way down right to the corner, down through Cena, Hornersville, Steele, right through the corner of the state.
Summersville to Cooter, I said that several times.
Now, you got Mississippi County, right?
Yes.
So it takes in Charleston, all that.
Yes, Charleston, East Prairie, Anniston, all through there.
Hard to have a county with more fun history than Mississippi County. From the courthouse burning back when there wasn't Republicans and they started to win a little bit, and then all of a sudden the records are gone, to Governor Hearns. Mississippi County's a fun place. It's going to be a fun place to represent.
Oh, yeah, it is. And they're great people over there. Still got the ferry running. Really, really great area. Enjoy going over there.
Now, Barry, being the brother senator now, you're on the Farm Bureau board. Is that correct?
I am. I represent the District 6 and Farm Bureau, which is most of it's the 12 counties down here in Southeast Missouri, most of Jason's district, and yep, most of Holly Rader's new district, and a little, sure, bit of Carl Essinger's district.
How far west does it go?
Well, let's see, on the west side, we go to Ripley County, mm-hmm, and Wayne County, Butler County.
Yep. So tell me about where y'all grew up. We're here, I guess it's technically Peach Orchard, right?
We're located in downtown Peach Orchard, Missouri. Actually, where we're sitting used to be a railroad spur that ran through here. So.
Is that right? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, that's how the place got its name. When they put the railroad in, there was actually a place just up the road at the Pemiscot New Madrid County line where there was a little tin shed where people could wait for the train to come by. Because, of course, at that time, people were taking the train back and forth between towns here in the Boot Hill. And there was one peach tree that grew next to that shed, so the week the peaches were coming off, if you were there, you could pull a peach while you were waiting, and they would euphemistically refer to it as the Peach Orchard Stop. Well, when our great-grandfather came in and bought the ground here, started draining and clearing some of the plots, and decided to build his gin, grain elevator and store just across the road from where we're sitting now, they decided to move the railroad stop down here, since this was obviously going to be the hub of business in this area. And they talked about what to call it, and they talked about maybe calling it Stillmanville for him, but he didn't really want anything named after him. And so they said, well, we're going to move the Peach Orchard stop down there, so it just became Peach Orchard by default.
By association, yeah.
And then our father came along years later, and decided that it was kind of a shame that there weren't any peach trees in Peach Orchard. People would always come to visit, and they'd look around, they'd say, well, we see cotton, we see, you know, we see boll weevils, but we don't see any peach trees.
They'd drive right past Campbell and come here, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, well, people thought that we lived in Campbell.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
In Peach Orchard. And so actually, our father and my son planted, there's a very small peach orchard just across the road over here next to what was one of our more colorful historical businesses. Today there is a small peach orchard in Peach Orchard.
Something for the tourists to go see.
Yeah, for the tourists. Yeah.
Senator, tell us about growing up. Where'd you go to high school in Peach Orchard?
Well, so actually it's kind of interesting. So Peach Orchard is where our farm is, and actually where we grew up was about 3 miles to the west here, just north of a little town called Pumpkin Center. So I guess Officially, we live in the suburbs of Pumpkin Center and Peach Orchard, the two big metropolises. But
as a person from Stringtown, Missouri, I understand exactly what you're talking about.
So anyway, we grew up right there. In fact, I moved a long way from home. I moved 40 feet, built a home that's where I live right now, right next to where we grew up. But I actually attended, I started out at Clarkton School for about a year, and then I went to Kennett through the eighth grade.
The old Conway Twitty song about traveling all around. He moved just about a mile or so down from his dad, yeah.
But I went to Kennett through the eighth grade, and then actually I went to boarding school. Went to boarding school for 4 years.
Where at?
A place called Sewanee, Tennessee. It was a co-ed boarding school about 315 miles away from here, and so that's where I graduated high school from.
Barry, how'd you growing up, I guess, in Pumpkin Center, where was school at?
Well, I started off in Kennett, and then went to school in Clarkton for a few years, and I also went off to school, went off to the Sewanee Academy in Sewanee, which was, it's the same school that Jason went to, but they went through a reorganization after, apparently I broke something when I left.
Yeah.
They had to reorganize the school, but it's a beautiful little town. They've got a great school there, and honestly, we both loved it. It was kind of like a cross between the favorite classes you ever took when you were growing up and being at summer camp, because we were off by ourselves. You learned a whole lot about being independent. You learned a lot of self-discipline, because they watched out after you, but you're on your own. You could, you could certainly stub your toe if you had a chance, but it was a great school and loved it.
But I think maybe boarding school might be a little bit like serving in the state senate. You know, you're gone for a few days a week on your own. You can certainly find a way to stub your toe, and you got some fun things to do, but then some less than fun.
Actually, like my brother said, we both loved it. Now, I will say this. I was a proctor, what they call an RA now, a resident assistant.
Oh, gosh.
For 2 years. Now, my brother, he didn't get in that category. So.
As a person that lived in one for a while, I respect Barry a lot more in this. I didn't care for my RA that much. He didn't care for me, so we agreed on that. But
you just should have come on over to Sewanee. I ran pretty good ship. So.
All right, tell me about college.
So, you know what? I always loved to farm. I mean, just that's... In fact, I loved going to boarding school, but I couldn't wait to get home to farm. So actually, I went to the University of Tennessee at Martin. Spent about a year and a half over there.
Well, that's a good school.
Great school, great people. Have some lifelong friends. Pledged the Alpha Gamma Rho fraternity. Actually, I still talk to those my pledge brothers today, and still talk to some of those guys today. Close to home, was kind of going through a little bit of reorganization on the farm. My dad had brought me in as a partner, and so we were starting to build that business up. And my dad was kind of funny. He really wanted me to start out small, and so we started out together farming about 400 acres. So anyway, spent time at University of Tennessee, Martin. And then after about a year and a half, had some different aspirations, and so transferred to the University of Missouri. Finished up the University of Missouri, got a degree in agronomy and a minor in animal science. And left there, came back here, and been farming ever since.
So. Now, Barry, what did you do after boarding school?
Well, I liked Sewanee so much that I stayed there, went to the University of the South, which is in the same town. The University of the South operated the academy, and got my degree in psychology there, which made perfect sense for a guy who's now in the cotton business.
Yeah, totally.
And after that, I went to Memphis for several years, went to graduate school, got another degree in psychology, and played music, and started dipping my toe into the cotton business a little bit. Our father had started a cotton brokerage, and I was helping him a little bit, and then in 1992, there were some things changed on the farm. Our father's partner passed away in an unfortunate accident, and so I came home, and I've been here running the cotton business ever since. Helped him out on the farm a little bit with Jason and my son, and when I came here, I was the smallest cotton merchant in the state of Missouri, and today I am the largest cotton merchant in the state of Missouri, which may be due to the fact that everyone else either passed away or left. So I'm not sure if I'm smarter.
Either due to success or just durability, sustainability.
Yeah. Yeah, the jury is still out whether I figured out something that they didn't know or whether they figured out something I didn't know. But no, so I'm still here, and I buy cotton around the state and sell it around the world.
Well, now, most folks are going to know this name, but tell us about the former state representative, Ott Bean, your father.
Well, our father, he grew up just north of here, up outside of Gideon. His birth certificate said that he was born between Tallapoosa and Fraley, and he was a little embarrassed by that. So when he was in the Army, he actually got that changed to show Gideon on his on his birth certificate. But he was born on a ditch bank up there. Grew up farming. He also went off to school. They scraped their money together, and he went to the Western Military Academy up in Alton, Illinois. When he graduated from there, he went to Mizzou on a basketball scholarship. Played for a year and decided that he had no aspiration to be a professional basketball player. I mean, he always said he was interested in military service and farming. Those are the two things he was interested in. The basketball scholarship was sort of fun, and the people that offered him the scholarship didn't see it that way. So,
just a real quick bit of interest. I ran into Norm Stewart last year at a football game. He remembered Dad. He played for me in 1960 or so.
Shelby County's own, right?
Pretty interesting. Yep, absolutely. So anyway, go ahead.
So he went through and finished up at Mizzou, and actually took him a few years because he was paying his way, and so he did it. Would do a semester on and a semester off. Would come home and pick cotton to pay for his next semester. He and my mother got married while he was at Mizzou, and she was a Stevens girl. She was from here. Like as I said, on one side of our family, the Stillmans came in, and they bought a substantial tract of land here around Peach Orchard, cleared it, established the gin and the store and farmed, and the beans were a little more motley crew up in Gideon, but they were scrappers and did well, and mom and dad got together, and he farmed, got involved in the Republican Party very early on. Got involved in
before there was Republicans, right?
Before there was a Republican Party, people didn't know how to spell it back then. So,
he had a meeting in New Madrid, wasn't it?
Yes.
And they had a meeting in their meeting place was a phone booth, wasn't it?
And they had room to invite a couple of friends to come in and join them.
So, when you growing up, politics something that was talked about around the dinner table?
Absolutely. You know, a lot of talk about, of course, Bill Emerson. Bill Emerson and his family friends. When Bill first ran, he and Joanne would stay with us. So Bill Emerson, John Danforth. I used to have a little knife that John Danforth gave me. I was proud of that. And I took it to the airport in a check-on bag, and they took the knife. I mean, it was just a little.
Yeah.
So, John Danforth, Kit Bond. I mean, all those were, what we grew up with, hearing those names and.
We talk about Bill Emerson, the original Republican around here.
Oh, absolutely.
It was just, and it's so funny today, you hear people arguing about over some small issue. You're not a Republican, you're not for whatever they made up that day from Twitter. Bill Emerson had to get votes from people that voted for every other office for a Democrat. He had to convince them to vote for him and was wildly successful. And I always think right now, you get somebody that wins a state rep race by 300 primary votes, they think they've just accomplished things. Well, everybody here stands on Bill Emerson's shoulders in one way or another. Just no other way about it,
Well, actually, when Dad first ran, it was the same thing. When he ran for the House in 2002, there had never been a Republican represent Dunklin County in the House of Representatives.
So now tell me that. Now this is my recollection of it. At first, you had a. So Dave Haggart was the person that people would call down here, and they would call your father, and they'd pretty much have the full round of people that would talk to Republicans covered.
That's about the truth.
And then there was a state rep district. We've lost some population, so there was kind of a Pemiscot-New Madrid district, and there was like a Dunklin, little bit of Stoddard County District, right? Kind of went up into Bernie or something.
Right.
And there was a pharmacist, right? Is it Mitchell ran? Right.
Keith Mitchell ran. Well, first there was Brian Mitchell.
Okay.
Who ran. It was not successful. And then
Keith come close?
Well, Keith ran after.
Okay.
Dad. After Dad passed away.
I just remembered there was one race where it was kind of close. And then it went away for a while. There wasn't much went on. And then your dad ran. And then everybody, their Barklage, who was the person that was helping people from Cape, a legendary political, you can see him on my TV show, David Barklage. He's the one with the frosted kind of weird hair. You wouldn't think he's from Cape. But I remember him saying, he said, "No, we're going to win that this time."
Well, Philip Britt was actually the state representative.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then Philip was not going to run. And
he got a drug court appointment. Is that what happened?
Yes,
he get put a drug court judge up.
And
Well thought of, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very well. I will never forget, Dave Agger called me. And I was in the office, which wasn't this office. It was, we were across the road. And he said, "Jason, we've got to find somebody to run for the 163rd seat." And I said, I don't know. Let me think about it. And about that time, Dad pulled up. And I said, "I got an idea." I said, "But let me call you back." And when Dad came in, and I just said, "Hey, Dad, I got an idea. I probably won't repeat the words that he told me." But it was basically no. And so I said, "Hey, why don't you do me a favor?" And I actually sent him down to talk to Dave Hagg. I said, "David wants to talk to you about something." I don't think I even told him he was going to talk to him about that. But David Haggard, Jake Fisher, and actually Caleb Davis, who was a Democrat, they all met Dad down at Braggadocia, Missouri. And that's where they started laying the groundwork to get him to run.
So. I mean, it was after that, that was a close race, and then it kind of just died, the interest died for a little bit. And your dad, when he said he was going to run, if I recall, maybe a little later in the cycle, I think Phil Britt got appointed to that, and of course, the Democrats thought there's no way anybody would win that seat. That's a Democrat seat, has been since there was a Missouri.
Yeah, he actually filed on the last day you could file.
Yeah, I remember, it'll tie a question I'm going to ask you in a minute, but it was, I just remember them thinking, well, nobody's, this is not going to be contested. And all of a sudden, Barclay just was like, he said, "This is over. We're going to win."
You bring it up, so I'm going to tell you.
Yeah.
We met David Barclay. Dad and I met David Barclay in Cape Girardeau and rode to Jefferson City to file. And we were in David's car breaking the sound barrier.
Oh,
and there was probably 3 inches of slush on the interstate.
And he's probably on the phone the whole time.
And Dad and I are looking at each other. I mean, we're thinking, "Hey, we're going to go ahead and call the funeral home. We're never going to make it." So I will never forget that. In fact, we got up there and I said, "Hell, can we rent a car?" I just want to drive back safe.
I remember thinking it was over, and the race was, it was close, but it was a pretty good win. I mean, for down here, right?
It was close, and it was exciting. At one point the party walked away from us because they had some polling that didn't show us winning, and so they said, they didn't want to waste a lot of money. And fortunately, at that point, Dad's long history and connections with the Emersons paid off. Joanne stepped in on our behalf and helped give us a little bit of extra support, helped ease, iron out a few wrinkles, and so we continued. But actually, it was funny because we were getting calls from the Post-Dispatch and the Kansas City Star about 2 weeks before the election. They were calling down to say, "How is it that this 60-year-old Republican who's never run for any office in a safe Democratic district has people like Kit Bond coming down to do fundraisers for him and appear for him?" And and he rattled off, and John Danforth talking about him and all these folks. And so we had to pull on an awful lot of strings to make.
Well, you
that
had
happen.
Those chits to call in, though.
That's what we told people. And they said, "What was the secret?" And we said, "Well, Dad had been campaigning for 40 years." So,
just not for himself till the end.
Well, if you campaign, if you spend 40 years getting yourself known at the coffee shop, being an ag leader, being involved in everything, there's an awful lot of folks will come back and help you out.
Well, that's what we met people. I think the state misses in term limits is the folks that do that, you don't see that as much anymore. You don't get that person that has the length of time that's been to every coffee shop, knows where every creek and every gravel road is, and it's not the fault of anybody that serves now. It's just kind of the downside of those term limits are you're seeing less and less people like him being that House representative. It's a bit different world.
Yeah, well, there are some. This guy sitting next to me,
yep.
Well,
you see him more jump in the Senate.
Parlayed being a leader and being involved in things for 20 or 30 years. So when people said, why are you just jumping to the Senate? We could point out, this guy may not have been in elected office, but he's been out there, been involved. He's been a leader. He's been fighting for these same issues for 20 years or more.
So tell me about election night when your dad won.
You know what? We all came in. We actually were at a Mexican restaurant. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the highs and the lows. And it was great preparation for this last race because, like I said, all the highs and lows we went through. And we came in, really were exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And I will never forget the numbers start coming in. And there's some great numbers coming in. And there's some not so good numbers in.
Get Malden, Bernie, kind of good, right? And Kennett, little rougher, and you go south, a little rougher.
I think we lost Kennett. But I will never forget that Jerry Brown's campaign manager, and he's sitting there, and he goes, we're in trouble. Because all that's left is Clarkton. And we never, Republican never wins Clarkton. And we all kind of grinned because really, Clarkton was our closest town.
Yeah, that's actually going to town. You're going to Clarkton.
You talked about the coffee shops. Dad knew every coffee cup in Clarkton. Right? and when those numbers came in, it was just, we won it. It was great. So
it's a cool feeling. Absolutely. All right, we're going to take a break. I always want to thank our sponsors, Missouri Farm Bureau, Missouri Association of Electric Co-ops, letting us come and talk in different parts. I said today we're in Pemiscot County, but you'd only kind of know it if you really, you'd have to know the lay of the land real well. We're down in the Boot Hill talking to the next state senator from the 25th, Jason Bean, his brother Barry Bean. We're at Bean and Bean Cotton, and we'll be right back after this.
We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the Missouri way of life. We're for worrying less about the what ifs and more about the why nots. We're for checking off your bucket list and then making a new one. For starting a family, a business, a tradition. And if you find yourself starting over, we're here for that too. We're for building a life in Missouri and then going out and living it. And when it comes to making sure everything you've built is protected, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered for life.
Welcome back to Showing Missouri, the history of Missouri. Usually one county at a time. Now we're talking about intermixing in here the history of some of our new state senators or some of our outgoing folks. We are down in Peach Orchard, Missouri, at Bean and Bean Cotton with Barry Bean. Folks will know that last name, but they'll maybe recognize you as a state board member of Farm Bureau. Thanks for sticking with us.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
The new state senator from the 25th, Jason Bean. Thank you for joining. Sticking around with us, I guess.
Hey, thank you for coming down. Enjoying it.
So we heard about Barry's cotton merchant business. Tell me about the farm you do.
Well, I kind of told you earlier, my dad and I started in 1990 farming together, kind of. He wanted me to start on about 400 acres, and so we started out mainly a cotton farm. And we slowly have grown that farm we're just a cotton farm now. We're cotton, corn, rice, soybeans, wheat. We've even got some potatoes and watermelons. Mm. And we were mainly farming here in Pemiscot County. Now we're Pemiscot, Dunklin, New Madrid County.
How many acres you do?
We've got several acres that we farm, a little over 10,000. Like I said, we've grown that business over time. Just worked our way through there. My nephew's working with me, doing a really, really great job. Proud to have him. Got a great crew, been with me for a long time. Truly great group of people to work with. I enjoy working with them. That's why I enjoy farming. So.
You know, when anybody talks about watermelon farming, that pitching melons from Neelyville just goes through my head. That was work. Boy, there's always you'd bust one, and then the sweat bees would be everywhere. The first one that busted them, you could get to rotate into driving the truck, or you'd get to be on the trailer catching them and stacking them. Whoever busted one, they were in the field. They were pitching the whole day if you were the first one to break one.
Well, in fact, when we get through here, if you want to go pitch some, we've still got a few left.
Well, Gussie's actually with me. That'd be good for him. He might. We might put him to work out there. He'd. I don't think he'd last too long. We have to. We'll break him in a little easier.
We'll build some biceps on him.
Yep. I'll tell you. Oh boy, Bill, hauling hay is the hardest job, and it's. I almost hate it because I went through it before they did round bales. Really. Like, and even they were doing round bales when I was growing up, but nobody in Butler County could afford that, really. You just square bales. Now, that's a work. The only thing close to that is pitching mountains. Because I've always found you the worst thing ever is you get one of those guys tired doing the rows, and then they start, even if you get the seniority like I'd get, you get to stack them. But if he can't pitch them up there, what makes for a long day? And then you too many watermelons out in the field busted, then you get some problems when you get back to the barn and back to things that other folks that didn't grow up in South Missouri might know about. You knew about politics from watching your dad,
mm-hmm.
But you chose to get into it anyhow. Now, some folks might think you're about half crazy.
Well, you know, you just heard my brother say he got a degree in psychology, so...
what's wrong with you? Tell us, give us your professional opinion.
I'd have to charge you for that.
But no, seriously, I mean, I do think that... anytime there's been a race up here, be it the state house race or a state senate race, and even when Congresswoman Emerson resigned, there were folks that talked about one of the two of you running for office as the lines redrew, you know, kind of mattered. But if somebody would always go look at a map and find out where you're at, where you were listed at, and look, that name has been brought up before your dad ran, but certainly since your father ran. What made you decide to actually dive in right now?
Well, I mean, right now it's all about the timing. I had been watching the Senate seat and really interested in watching it, and had worked really well with Senator Libla, and I appreciate all the great things that he has done and kind of watched that. And like I say, when we just kind of watched the dynamic of what was happening, you had three people out of Poplar Bluff that were filing, so it looked like...
Nobody will fight harder. If you get Doug Libla on your side, mm-hmm. you got a fighter. Now he would take on a bear with a switch in the woods at night. There ain't nobody will go harder after something when you get him to believe in something than Doug Libla. Right.
So like I said, we just I really watched what he had done, and then going back to my father, and you know what? Let's go back even farther as a kid, like we're talking about. I grew up with Bill Emerson, the Dan Forrest, Kit Bond, and watching people work and fight for our area, watching people fight for Missouri, I mean, just et cetera, et cetera. And I really always took that to heart, and I really watched that. And then, you know, whether it be in college or even after college, I started getting involved in different organizations and really, really enjoyed the process of helping, being proactive, looking forward. It's something I've always truly enjoyed. I spent 13 years on the Missouri Soybean Merchandising Council. I worked with some great people there, and then even moved up to the United Soybean Board. Worked with 64 directors from across the United States, working toward helping soybean farmer and understanding the differences of what might work on your farm, but doesn't work on my farm, and how we learn to help one another. So just the whole process, you know, like I say, from a young kid watching our political leaders, watching that, I've always really enjoyed that process, and enjoy working with people and knowing that it's not going to be, you know, perfect every time, but that's part of the enjoy is to working through issues. Like I say, I just enjoy the process.
Yeah, in our family, going back to Dad, going back to our grandfather and great grandfather, I mean, it's just always been drilled in that there's if you care about what's going to happen, you have to be involved, and certainly that's always been true in agriculture. And so, you know, we've always been involved in Farm Bureau. We've been involved in different ag commodity organizations. Both our parents, both of us, we were growing up involved in the church. And in scout. I mean, in everything, there's just they kind of built into us a drive to, if you cared about what was going to happen, you had to go do it, because we really couldn't afford to sit back and wait for someone else to do it. And once you do that long enough, you do realize that you've got some opportunities there, and you don't want them to slip past. And so, you know, whether it's Jason's race for the Senate or what I'm doing in Farm Bureau, you know, when you look around, you realize I'm in a position to do something not everybody gets an opportunity to do, you don't want to just let that slide past and leave mm-hmm. something undone. You know, there's an obligation to jump in there and do what you can, because we do actually care about what happens with our state, what happens with agriculture, what happens with our commodities and our local community down here in the Boot Heel.
So tell me, you know, I mean, it's a dynamic that's different. For if you live in Sedalia, Warrensburg, you're an hour and a half. You live in Columbia, you go home at night. You're down from Rolla. You might not go home every night. I mean, it is a drive, and the Senate's known for staying pretty late. But if you need to get back for something, a kid's ball game or something, you can run back down and back up. If you're from Peach Orchard, that ain't real life. You're 5 hours from Jeff City, I guess?
5 hours.
Yeah.
Correct.
And how do you go up 270? Do you go up through the woods, through Butler County?
You know, I'm kind of one I go through. I may go up 19, and then I may go up 55 to 70. Just kind of depends. I actually, all the times I've gone up there, I always try to take a different path, because I always learn something when I do that. So.
Well, it is a different sacrifice for folks from our neck of the woods than it is others. Not, I'm happy for them, but it's just different. When you go up to Jeff City for the week, you're there for the week. There ain't no coming home. It changes how you go about it. Tell us about your home life in Peach Orchard.
So my home life now, you know what, we've got three kids, 17, a 13-year-old, and a 10-year-old. Mm-hmm. We stay pretty busy. You know, I've always been on the farm, and then my kids have always been very involved. I'll go to Hawkins Public School, been involved in school stuff. My kids are very involved in tennis, love to play tennis. So we've always been used to being on the go. But one of the things that we always try to do is always incorporate our kids in everything that we do. And whether if I'm on the farm and if there's opportunity, we bring them on the farm. You know what, yesterday I had the opportunity to go to Butler County to sit into the emergency management presentation on mm-hmm. Hurricane Laura, and went over to school and got my 13-year-old daughter out a little bit early. So we try to really incorporate that, and that's really important for us. And we're going to try to continue to do that.
Well, I think it's so important to try to steal that time when you can. Because, mm-hmm. you know, come January, there'll be as many people as pulling on you now for time, like myself. You can have even more. Let's talk about policy. Let's talk about how you ran. See, I thought of that. I remembered it was very late, and I didn't know if your father decided to run and just filed the first day. I just something in my brain when as the cycle went on and you hadn't filed yet. I remembered your dad was not in that race until late. I didn't remember it was the last day, but I just knew. Because the Republicans were sweating it. I just remember the talk of, we can't find anybody, or maybe the person that was willing to do it just wasn't who they wanted. You waited till pretty late in the cycle to jump in, compared to most candidates.
Well, and I'm number one, I'm pretty calculated. I like to think an issue. I tend to think an issue all the way around it, go inside it before mm-hmm. Before I commit to something, and especially know how to attack it. The other thing that was very, very important to me, we just talked about family. I wanted to make sure my family was on board, they were comfortable, and that was not a decision that they could say, you know, hey, we're good in 5 minutes. So with a lot of discussions with, you know, close family, friends. Like I said, we wanted to make sure it was the right decision. And plus, remember, October, November, I was getting a crop out. So I had to
sure.
kind of concentrate on that and get that out. But, you know, we really, I guess November, December, we spent a lot of time. And I'd say by Christmas, we were ready to go. We knew what we were going to do, and we were developing a plan right then. So
I hear folks talk about hustling it, and every candidate does. And I'm sure every candidate thinks they are, right? I mean, that's one thing in the media. I don't really have a lot of pet peeves about media, but one I have is they treat people like everybody in office is on the take, or whatever. It's a lazy, they're easy to do. It's damn hard to win an election. It's certainly hard to win a state Senate seat. And it's, even though you had a little bit of an advantage having your father, and you knew some of the machinations of it, coming in your first race and running a state Senate race is extremely difficult. And I saw Ryan Gill, who I thought did a heck of a job for you. That's mm-hmm. a name I think folks at the Capitol are going to get to know. He told me how hard it is working. And I was like, you know, you hear that, right? And my assumption is your opinion would be closer than most, because you had to work hard to win that House seat with your dad. But I was getting gas in Van Buren at the gas station. Everybody stops at Van Buren. It's got the McDonald's attached mm-hmm. to it. And I saw your sign there. Now, I was like, now, how in the hell is a guy from Peach Orchard have a sign way up here in the hills in Van Buren that aren't me? I do think, tell us about maybe how you said you were calculated. Tell us about the work that went into it on the doors that maybe people didn't see in the media ads.
Well, I mean, we had a plan. We kind of knew what we were going to do, when we were going to do it. You know, Ryan Gill, you mentioned Ryan. Ryan Gill worked for the Missouri Soybean Association for 2.5 years, so he kind of understood Jefferson City.
If you work with Gary Wheeler, you put in a day's work. That's a fact.
There you go. Ryan is from Porterville, Missouri, so he knew the Boot Hill. He knew agriculture, so we knew we were good there. Something a lot of people don't know about Ryan was a 2-time combat veteran.
I did not know that.
So you know what? Get into politics. I knew.
Well, I tell you, you find out if a combat veteran very seldom says it. You have to find it out from somebody else almost.
Right. And so, you know, and I appreciate Ryan for his service.
Sure,
for that.
Absolutely.
So, you know what? We had our team ready. We know kind of what we're going to do here. We're going to know what we're going to do there. We come out, we announce what, February the 15th or whatever it was there. Sure. We come out, we make our announcement, and then we got thrown a major curveball.
The whole world did.
COVID. I mean, yeah, the whole world. COVID hit. We couldn't do anything. What are we going to do?
Then there was a curveball, I thought, for this race. There was a strategy by some candidates. In this situation, I guess you had some folks that are for charter schools, which if you're listening to this and you're just Southeast Missouri and learning about your senator, charter school is something you wouldn't know much about. But in St. Louis, Kansas City, it's like an alternative to public schools. You can have a kind of special school that different turn folks go to. They don't go to public school. And in St. Louis, the folks, it's not really a Catholic school, which a lot of those folks go to. It's its own kind of third thing. They keep a lot of money against you. They didn't have a lot of flattering things to say about you.
Oh, you know what? If you get bogged down in that, you can't. You never can move forward, so I don't even pay attention to that.
But you powered through. There had to be some internal discussions. And I know Barry was heavily involved in the campaign because that's who I talked to a lot about it. It was you kind of withstood some of their money. And you had the money advantage at the end. That had to be, I'm sure it was calculated, but you had to have almost get an itchy trigger finger to pull your and start spending yours when you're getting hit like that.
Well, now remember, what am I? I'm a farmer.
Yeah.
You know how many times I went out and planted a crop, come up beautiful, and get a sandstorm, a hailstorm, or a flood?
Yeah.
That's part of it. And you know what? You don't sit there and lay down. You get back up. You get going. And that's, you know, just like when COVID hit. I mean, I'll give you an example. When COVID hit, we thought, what are we going to do? And it took us about 2 days to say, you know what? We're going to start putting up signs. We hadn't planned to put up signs for
which was traditionally something you wouldn't do till later, right?
Right, till later. But we said, you know what? We can be out here. We're not infringing on anybody's space. We're social distancing. We're doing our thing. And we covered a lot of ground early doing that. You know, some other things that we had planned on to do, some door knocking. But you know what? That didn't work out. We didn't want to do that. So what did we do? We hung our pamphlets on people's door. We didn't knock. We just hung. Well, here's something a lot of people don't know. We hung 9,000 door hangers in the district.
And there may be somebody listening to this in Chesterfield that thinks that's impressive, but not as impressive. Well, houses in Gideon and Clarkton and Van Buren, they ain't on top of each other like they are in Chesterfield. There ain't no cul-de-sacs in Van Buren. You're going a long way to get to from house 1 to house 9,000 is a heck of a long way.
Mm-hmm. But like I say, I tell you this over and over. I've been through floods. I've been through hailstorms. And you know what? You just persevere. In fact, in high school, they gave away 4 big awards, and one of them was a Perseverance Award. Guess who got that award? You know, I got that award. So once again, we just persevered. Yes.
Kind of like your brother. Are you successful or you perseverance? Perseverance or brilliance, one or both, right? Maybe mix that cocktail half and half.
Yeah. They'll figure that out in retrospect.
Well, let's talk about some issues now. Obviously, you got COVID. Right now, I'll talk about 2 things in the media, then I'll talk to you, if you don't mind, about a couple of things that actually probably have more to do with the state Senate. This is a part of the state. You have COVID in the news right now, and you have some of these civil unrest protests. Some folks call them riots. My assumption is, being from down here, folks down here, if they have to pick a side between protesters and police, they're on the side of the cops pretty hard. Mm-hmm. How do you approach that?
Well, I mean, I definitely do not agree with any defunding of police, period. Yeah. I mean, we've heard about that. And I am friends with many, many police officers, and they have my 100% full support. I sleep pretty good every night knowing we've got some great men and women out there protecting us. So, you know what? I want to be in favor, you know, support the police. And at the same time, I'm here to listen you know, the protesters. I'm here to listen to what they're saying, and that's part of my job.
It's going to be a surprise to some folks that aren't familiar with this area, but your district has a large African-American population. Mm-hmm. You go down Hayti, Penobscot County, and you imagine Ted Maltby is somebody I think real highly of. And I do believe, this is just my own personal thought, is, you know, Neelyville. We had a larger percentage of our graduating class was African Americans and maybe most folks in Southeast Missouri. And I think there is something to the fact that black folks have a harder hand of it in Missouri, America, but Missouri, than some folks that look like the three of us. I do think sometimes it's easy to just talk about law and order, but there's, you know, to me, like if you're Mike Parson, who I believe to be a kind man, when that many of your constituents, I mean, just because they're in St. Louis, just because they're African Americans, doesn't mean they're not his constituents, just they're as much as the three of us. I think there may be something to hearing folks out. And in your district, I think it would surprise people the number of African American constituents that you'll have first of the year.
And we've met with a lot of African American communities still doing that, trying to work forward to, you know, listening to their concerns, and that's what's important. And we talked about that as possibly getting a lot of groups together with police, just talking about concerns. And I think that's important for everybody to be heard, and everybody's wide open to it. We're all in a good spot there.
Tell me about COVID. Down here, like, you know, I got a property in Baldwin, and everybody there, it's just like total recall, like the bus station. Everybody's got a gloves, masks, they take it very seriously. You tell my mama about COVID in Stringtown, Missouri, mom's there to get mad at you for bothering her. It is truly, I've never seen anything where your zip code, you tell me where you live, and I'll tell you with real good accuracy what you think about COVID. The governor has let local folks make some decisions. Folks in St. Louis have decided they want to have a bunch of regulations. I saw Jefferson County today. They decided last night they were going to have one, and the sheriff come out and kind of, remember that old Andrew Jackson quote? Supreme Court made some ruling, and Andrew Jackson said, John Marshall's made his ruling, now let him enforce it. I saw the health department in Jeffco come out and said, you got to wear a mask. Well, the sheriff said, well, they've made their ruling, now we're not going to enforce it, they'll have to. What do you think as far as, let's just break it down to masks. Do you think that's something, the governor gets a lot of heat from the Post and the Star about having statewide, I just get the sense it'd be hard to go to Carter County where there's been 36 people get diagnosed with this and make them wear a mask when I don't think that. I just think they just tell you no. What do you think?
Well, you know, our state's diverse. I mean,
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that, you know, if masks work in St. Louis, I fully support that. That's what they want to do. I don't think they work in Carter County. I know they don't. So, you know, and I support that too. That's the one thing. I'm very supportive of the local control and what you want to do.
Well, it's just my horse sense, and maybe I'm wrong. Well, your psychology part, you get it. I think folks have to see a problem before they're going to – and I hate to say this. I just think the honest part of life is in St. Louis, you might have known somebody that passed from COVID or got real sick. In Stringtown, you're very unlikely to. In places like that throughout the state, in Shannon County, you're very unlikely to know anybody that's gotten real sick or even passed away.
Well, you know, it's actually, it's even more so than that. It's approaches to what a proper role of government is, or how much we need hard and fast rules versus general principles. And you know, in St. Louis, in a liberal area, in a more democratic area, they really want a lot of very specific rules. They want a strong central government that's going to come in and tell them what they're going to do, and you're going to do this, and you're not going to do that. Out in the country, we tend to be a lot more independent. We don't respond as well to that. What we want is a few general rules. Don't shoot anybody. Don't steal anything.
Golden rule, maybe. Yeah.
Don't bother your neighbors, and they'll leave you alone. I mean, that's why we live out here, because we like that. If we wanted a whole lot of rules and a whole lot of structure, we know where St. Louis is. And so I think the responses to COVID are a lot along those lines, that people out in rural areas feel like there's a risk-reward analysis to be done.
And everything, they can
make that. They can decide what risks they're comfortable taking, what they aren't. In St. Louis, they want someone else to make that risk-reward analysis for them, and tell them with some authority that, okay, we've done the analysis, and this is safe, and this is unsafe. And that's, I mean, poor Mike Parson is stuck having to govern both areas. I'm sure he would be much happier if he could just have one Senate district to set a mask policy for, because he could probably do that and make 80% of the people happy.
I'd say that
whichever way you went.
I'd say you could stretch from Bolivar over to the lake and his old Senate district. I bet you there ain't a whole lot of debate about. I seen the city of Sedalia tried to have a mask ordinance right before, I guess, it, They called it the State Fair. It was a livestock show probably as much as anything. And David, Dick, the commissioner there, was like, well, don't bother anybody at the fair. You do what you want in town, but don't be bugging people. And I walked in the Hotel Bothwell, and the lady said, well, the city tries to have one of these orders, but you don't have to do that. And I was like, well, thanks. I'll do whatever you ask. But let's talk about the Senate. I think everybody, you're going to walk in that chamber. It is such an honor to be one of the 34 people, the tradition of that. I really believe in Missouri, the institution that served this state best over time has been the state Senate. It's got to be a humbling experience to know you're going to walk in there as one of those people and the giants that you're going to have followed into that room. Senator Webster, that former Senator Tenen from here in Southeast Missouri, you know, Senator Scott, there's Senator Matheson, we talk about the state fair. It's got to be an honor to walk in there.
Oh, I mean, you took the two words out of my mouth, honor, and it's humbling. Every time I've ever even walked in the chamber, I'm telling you, my hair raises up because, and I'm a huge person with, you know, history and the whole ambiance. I love that. That's a big, say, it will be a truly a humbling and probably a little overwhelming experience at first. So.
You walk in there in that room, you'll immediately be the largest farmer there. Senator Huff is a cattle farmer.
Yes.
Senator Brown has several businesses, one of which is a little bit of row crop. But you'll walk in that room probably the foremost expert on agriculture in the state. I guess that's I guess you have to be ready for some questions that you might people will expect you to be the resident expert on day one.
Absolutely. Well, and I've had a lot of training of that, and I'm ready. And once again, that's an honor. I mean, that is truly an honor that people will ask those questions, and I'll be ready to meet that challenge.
I mean, Barry, when they're talking about ag issues now, I guess they'll be like, well, your brother's for this, right? Or he's going to stop this, or he's going to, you know.
It would be fair to say that the Farm Bureau is very happy with the way this went, and there's a lot of folks that we're going to be looking at Jason and Don Roan over in the House, and fortunately we've got a governor, lieutenant governor, we expect to still see there.
They do a little farming themselves, yep.
So yeah, we feel like we've got a pretty strong team, and we're pretty happy with our director of agriculture right now as well. So looking at it from agriculture's standpoint, I mean, the only way this could be better would be if we had elected a half dozen or a dozen Jasons to the Senate, and you know, and we were in a position that we really had you know, more of them. But we've got a strong team right now.
So tell me something. I think everybody's just going to assume that when there's an ag thing, they're going to come find you and talk to you about it. Tell me something you have a passion for that maybe people wouldn't initially just thought.
Well, transportation. Yeah. And that's somewhat part of my ag background, just because you know, we transport everything to the port. Transportation is so important. You know, I've carried a CDL since I was 21 years old. And your
predecessor cared a lot about transportation?
Absolutely.
It's a damnedest thing. You get Republicans. And, you know, I think it's a victim of success. When your dad ran, this district was not Republican. But he was heading into a majority for the first time ever. And these seats were – it wasn't a God-given right Republican to be in the majority forever. Mm-hmm. And now that they act like there are, it's somehow become part of the party's mantra that the government shouldn't just do a few things and do them well. They should do no things, and it doesn't matter how they do them. I hear some Republicans, they run it like a business. And some of those Republicans have never owned a business or ran one. But if you run something like a business, that means you're going to take care of things. You don't buy a piece of equipment and do no maintenance on it. You don't buy a farm and do no upkeep. Mm-hmm. I mean, those line items are in your budget for a reason. The transportation system we have, I watch people make good faith efforts to try to just maintain it, and some Republicans throw a fit about maintaining it. It's something I watched Doug Leibla. Doug Leibla is not a high tax guy. I mean, he owned a factory, for goodness sakes. But I watch him step out of his comfort zone on something that really mattered and catch all kinds of grief. I guess you have to be ready to have some folks that just, they don't fight you with reason and logic. They fight you with like 140 character Twitter posts. Mm-hmm. How do you get around that? How do you explain that to a senator why it's important? That just may not care too much about the transportation grid or just thinks it'll just, you know, I guess the roads will just fix themselves. I'm not sure. But how do you get across the importance to you and your constituents to these roads?
Well, Going back to one of the things that's probably one of my number one priorities is economic development, and trying to make people understand is when industry comes to look at an area, what are they looking at? They're looking at that transportation. I mean, I think there's a, I can't remember what it is, they have to be, when they leave their place of business, they want to be up to 55 miles an hour and so many feet or yards or whatever.
One of those computers know every bit of that, don't they now?
And they do. So, you know, well, that's why transportation is so important in bringing businesses in, because I've made this, my number one priority is all along has been economic development. Transportation is part of that. And also something that's probably a really special pet peeve of mine is workforce development. You know, here in agriculture, takes a lot of labor, and we've had a lot of trouble finding labor. I hear that all over, no matter what industry you're in. So that's also
I've probably interviewed Mike Parson more than anybody else in the state of Missouri, dating back to when he was a House member. He said workforce development the entire time I've ever known him. Mm-hmm. It is an interesting thing to hear. The things you say could very easily come out of a Polk County farmer. The priorities seem to match up very well.
Well, I've already been doing a little work trying to, we've got the Boot Hill Education Center here in Malden, Missouri, that is no longer operating, and we're already trying to look for some avenues, a possibility to turn that into a workforce development center.
Got two more questions. Traditional schools, that's something that Senator Libla took on. And in Jeff City, it kind of breaks down. Everybody agrees to fund the formula, but in the suburbs and the cities, they want to do a charter school. They want to do a internet learning type thing. Senator Libla, later in his career, decided he was going to try to contain those things to St. Louis and Kansas City. What's your thoughts on it?
I'm probably going to continue that. You know, there's obviously the public schools have some real issues in St. Louis, Kansas City, and the charter school. I'm fine with that there. Down here in the 25th district, you know, the you look at a school in a community, you take a little community, let's say Risco.
Mm-hmm. Risco, good ball team.
Good ball
Played
team.
Played at Risco a few times.
Yep. Had a good ball team this year, basketball team.
Yep.
Anyway, you take that school away from Risco, what happens to Risco?
Mm-hmm.
They're gone. And then you can look at just a few miles down the road, there's Gideon. Same deal right up there.
Neelyville. All the way over to Lone Star. You know.
There you go. You know. So that's why I say charter schools I don't have a problem with. We're going to keep them up in St. Louis, Kansas City, and
I always think if it's such a good idea, I'd be Republican about it. I'd be greedy. I'd want to stick it, keep it all up there until you get them perfected. But I would say there is one school, Twin Rivers, you might want to keep an eye on. Honestly, I told Commissioner Van Deven, you know, if there's one school district I'd watch for pulling shady stuff, it'd be Twin Rivers. I mean. And the superintendent emailed, I'm kidding. It was our old Neelyville rival was Twin Rivers. I'm sure it's a great school. Actually, it's probably not, but I'd go to Neelyville if I had the choice.
I know some principals there. Scott Fawn.
I played Bobby Marler in school, and we hated each other all through school. We were two of the better players on our teams. And finally, and later in life, we became just good friends. And one of our favorite things to do was sit back and have a beer and talk about it. We played ball against each other and just hated each other at the time. And just became, he's passed on, unfortunately, too early. But he became a dear friend of mine who I just, every time I think about him now, I start smiling. I always ask this. I ask this to everybody on television show, everybody interview anytime. You're coming to the Senate. The Senate, for folks that watch the Senate closely, always breaks down to the PQ. Are you willing to do a PQ on this or that? And everything sort of, it sort of works backwards from there, the negotiations do. What is your view on that, which to folks that don't pay attention would be shutting off debate on something?
Well, I think debate is very important. And, you know, I'm going to be a freshman senator coming out, true freshman. I mean, I've not served in the House, a true freshman. So I know my first year, it's going to be a lot of learning. And so the last thing that Jason Bean wants to come in and do and, you know, raise a hand and ask for a PQ. I think that's probably the wrong stance. So, you know what? I'm into definitely understanding issues. One of the things that it's very important to me is to get out and meet every state senator in the state of Missouri before we go to session in January. And to me, that's how you get things done. Getting to know one another, building those relationships so we don't have to go to something like a PQ. I think that's probably the last resort.
Senator, I appreciate the time. Appreciate getting to come down here. We got to enjoy some hickory log before, so I'm a happy boy when I get to come down and have some of them ribs and that. So I could put that sauce on toothpaste and love it. I love that sauce.
So we're going to do this again next week? Or
Well, I was figuring, yeah.
Every week, I'll be ready.
Barry, thank you so much for making the time. I appreciate the hospitality. Appreciate the visit.
All right, well, thank you for the ribs.
Now I'm always be careful when I'm talking to you. I'm like, what is he analyzing about what I'm saying now? Am I, you know, have the guys in the white coats come get me?
I've been analyzing you for years.
Well, y'all, thank you for joining us. Thanks to the Farm Bureau. And thank you to the co-ops for having us. And we'll see you next week on Show Missouri. We'll be from Clark County up in the far northeast corner. History of Missouri, one county at a time.